Hello and welcome to the Autism Mums podcast.
I'm Victoria.
And I'm Natalie.
We're two sisters raising autistic children who know the joy, the challenges and the everyday moments.
This is a supportive space for honest conversations, practical tips, shared strength and expert advice.
Whether you're celebrating a win, surviving a meltdown or just trying to make it through the day, we're right here with you.
Join us as we share the ups, the downs, and everything in between parenting autistic children.
We're so pleased to welcome to the podcast Whitney Price, the founder and executive director of Unpuzzled Parents Connect. As a passionate advocate and devoted mother, Whitney is committed to supporting families of children with autism and developmental disabilities. Her journey began as a mother navigating the complexities of special needs parenting, which inspired her to create a grassroots organisation that empowers families, particularly in rural communities like West Virginia. Through initiatives like Coffee and Connections and The Listening Room, Whitney fosters community, amplifies voices and drives meaningful change. Welcome to the podcast, Whitney. Can you talk about where your journey began?
My name is Whitney Price, and I am the founder of Unpuzzled Parents Connect. And our journey started, I would say, much like a lot of the other parents that I've spoke with that have a child that's on the spectrum. Connor is my little boy. He is almost 7 now, and he was diagnosed at the age of 2 with autism level 3. In the States where I am from, in West Virginia, we still diagnose off of the levels. So it's typical for a provider to give between a level 1 and level 3 diagnosis. Some of them will even say profound autism. And we started noticing back in 2020, when the pandemic had just started, that Connor was a little bit delayed in his speech. And for our region, we have what's called birth to 3, where different providers will come in between when the child is born up until the age of 3. And if they're not hitting these milestones, then they will suggest that a speech therapist or maybe an occupational therapist, physical therapist, anywhere that they are delayed in hitting the milestones, they will suggest that a therapist come in the homes and work with the child or infant. And we had Connor in daycare at the time, and they had let us know that someone came in to evaluate the children and that Connor qualified based off of a speech delay. And Connor's our only child, so we are also first-time parents. We didn't think much of it, and I brushed it off and said, he's a little bit behind, but he'll catch up. He's only 2. He's still a baby. And he was typical in the sense that he was still playing with toys. He was still calling for us in the way that he would still want to be picked up and just doing a lot of actions that a typical toddler would do. So we brushed a lot of things off at the beginning. And when the pandemic happened, the world was completely shut down. We had a lot of time to spend with Connor. And one of the silver linings was I called that agency and said, okay, what can I do? Can you send me some information? Can you send me a book? Send me something on maybe helping him speak or getting him to talk. So they immediately set us up with a speech therapist. Everything was virtual at the time. And we just started meeting with them every single week to go over the different activities that we could do with Connor. We had 120 days to spend with Connor when we were completely shut down. So I was home from work for that amount of time and thought, okay, something is starting to develop. New behaviors developed, but they weren't the typical Google research that you would do. They were not the typical red flags that you would see. Connor had great eye contact. He responded to his name. He'd point. He would cry and call for us in his own way, but he also was a jumper. So Connor was constantly active, wanting to seek sensory input. We didn't know that or what that was at the time. We just knew that he was a very active baby, didn't like to sleep, and we brushed a lot of things off. But new behaviors started to develop for Connor. So he also started to throw a lot. He started to spin the wheels on the car and obsessively flip things over and want to play with things in his own way. It wasn't running a car on a track. It was flipping it over, running the wheels, and then jumping until they stopped. And at first, that seems adorable. And we took thousands of videos of Connor doing the same repetitive movements. We would even jump with him. We would make games out of it, not realizing that we were just stimming to one of the activities that he enjoyed. So occupational therapy started to happen, and they came in our home and started to say, this might be a sign, but he's doing so well. He's so affectionate. All of these other typical signs that you would see for autism were not registering for Connor. So again, 6 months, we brushed it off and new developing behavior started to happen. He still was not speaking. At one point, they thought that he was deaf, but he would listen to sounds or different devices that were loud and put it up to his ear. So we thought, okay, maybe because he had reoccurring ear infections that the tubes had fallen out. We take him back to our pediatrician. We get him set up to have new tubes put in. 6 months later, he's still not speaking. So at that point, we said, okay, let's just do one more evaluation with the psychologist, have her come in, and we'll see what happens. And she did. It was a 3 hour long evaluation. My husband and I were there as well. She came into the home. He was the first person outside of the home, other than his babysitter, that he had seen since the pandemic happened. So 6 months he was in home in isolation, but he's still little. He was 2.5. We didn't think much of it. We thought he does have lack of playing with peers. Maybe that's why he's not realizing how to properly play with these toys and go through these different emotions. So she comes in, he immediately clicks with her. He's sitting on her lap. He's trying to engage. And I'm thinking, she's going to think we're nuts. She's going to think you're overreacting. You are first-time parents that are just nervous. He's just a little speech delayed. So we're going through, she is asking us thousands of questions, how my pregnancy went, if he's on medication, if I'm on medication, if my husband's family's any background with them, with mine. And the whole time he's being phenomenal. He's pointing to the colors that she's asking, the numbers, the animals. He's getting everything right. He knew his ABCs, numbers up to 10. She's complimenting how smart he is. My husband and I are just smiling. Yeah, he is so smart. He's just not speaking yet. We get through the evaluation and she starts reading off these numbers on the chart. And she says he has global developmental delay in these different quadrants of he is behind in social emotional, he is behind in speech, and these different developments that she's looking at. And she said, has anybody talked to you guys about autism? And I said, that's why you're here, right? I thought maybe, but I said, what about the colors and the numbers? She said, those are great. And he is still advanced in some areas right here. She said, but on this chart where he's delayed 50%, 25% here, 60% here, and the list just kept growing. And she said, this is an autism diagnosis. I said, how certain are you that it's not, like, how sure? How long have you been doing this? She said, almost 10 years. And at that point, my heart sank because I was really hoping that she would say, I just started, or this is my gut feeling, or that she was wrong in some way. So we had our grieving moment, and then we went through a process of, no, she's wrong. We went through every emotion that a parent goes through in the quadrants of grief, anger, denial, self-isolation. And we thought, okay, so what do we do now? And she said, we need to try these therapies, speech, occupational, physical therapy, behavior therapy, and ABA therapy, which is applied behavior analysis. We have that in the States, and it's very hard to find in my state in West Virginia. It is like a unicorn. So at that point, we were going back to work. the world was slowly opening up again. And we were stuck because Connor was about ready to turn three. So we're saying, okay, now what do we do? The silver lining was I had a brand new ABA therapy center that opened up right beside the dealership that I was working at. And I'm like, okay, so we call, we get him in. He's the first patient there. So they start seeing him full time. Connor was going 6 hours a day, 5 days a week, very intensive therapy. We were also booking him appointments with different evaluators, a neurologist, a psychologist from our WVU Medical Institute, which is the best in the state. We wanted to make sure he was autistic and that we weren't wrong. She wasn't wrong. And of course, they gave us another level three diagnosis. During that whole process, we were told by coworkers, managers, family, don't label the baby. Don't label him. Don't do anything that's going to set him apart and make him stand out from the crowd. Just do what you can because he's going to grow out of it. It's going to be fine. You're first-time parents. He's just a little delayed. You were delayed. Your husband was delayed. Everybody is just learning at their own pace. So don't label this baby. So my husband and I spent about a year in isolation. We didn't talk about it. We just went with it. I had to ask my job to make schedule adjustments so that I could take him back and forth to therapy and drive 45 minutes one way and back. And we were both working 6 days a week to make up for the time and long lunches that we had to do while we were driving back and forth. But we thought he's going to progress. He started to say a few words here and there, and we thought, what's going to take off? Eventually, he's starting to talk. Maybe it's just not his time yet. But when they hit 3 years old and they're around different three-year-olds or other three-year-olds, you start to really notice the deficit that they are in. And when Connor was around another three-year-old at the doctor, I remember looking over and this mom was like, oh, she just won't be quiet. I'm so sorry. And this little girl was interacting with me, telling me stories. And I just felt so alone thinking, I've got this little boy over here who's saying one or two words, and this little girl is making up fantasies, and I can't understand a single word that my son's saying. So that made it even worse, that self-isolation start to set in even harder, and people at work didn't understand. They're still so little, and they're cute. They're easy to mask over anything that's going on. Easy to overlook these little quirks and habits that they're starting to form, these new stims that they're starting to have. All of those things were easy to brush off because they blend so well with their peers. So during that time, we have what's called West Virginia waiver here, which is our form of Medicaid. If you are able to qualify based off of a disability, they don't look at your income. You don't have to be in a low income to be able to qualify. And luckily for us, Connor qualified based off of his disability for autism. So what that meant was our co-pays were going away because my insurance company had rejected his therapy several times. So we were paying out of pocket. At one point, we were paying $3,500 a month. So we were paying a car payment plus a mortgage plus another mortgage just for therapies. And this new therapy center was taking advantage of parents like us. They weren't trying to help in any way. They just said, hey, you have a very heavy bill. Your insurance isn't paying it. We have to be paid. We didn't care. We were going to drain our bank account, whatever we needed to do to keep him in therapies, we were going to do. And right up until the point that we thought, okay, we're going to have to sell our house. We're going to have to move, maybe move out of the state to another state that has better resources. He was given that opportunity to get on this program and everything changed for us. We were able to breathe. We were able to not pay as much out of pocket. We were able to seek other therapy services with other providers. Life completely changed. So when that happened, I said, okay, we need to tell the other parents that we've met at this therapy center, make sure that their kids are also on this program. Because we knew that if our child was, they were going to likely qualify too. And we knew other parents that were paying out of pocket and feeling as drained as we were. So that is when Unpuzzled Parents Connect support group started. We were a group of 10 parents at a round table with me presenting the tiny facts that I knew about this program, saying, hey, I could probably walk you through how I got on it. You guys can get on it. And then in the meantime, we started learning more about different programs that our kids will qualify for that could have saved us thousands had we known sooner. But the silver lining there was, even though we were having an awful time at this therapy center, we were able to say, okay, let me help you, and then we'll figure this out together. And we now have a friend. We've made a friend for our kid and for ourselves, most importantly, because we'd felt so alone. We were around parents who were had kids around Connor's age, which meant that their journey just started too. We were at the peak of the pandemic, so none of us really knew what therapies we should be getting Connor and our children into, where the kids were going to develop emotionally, socially, and the self-isolation started to melt. So we created this Facebook group. It was a private group just for the 10 of us, so we could post different resources or memes or anything that was comical or that would be humorous just to lighten each other's day. And we started meeting up for coffee. We're like, hey, let's just have a little outing. 5 or 10 of us would get together. But the beauty in it was there wasn't a support group around us, at least in our region. So we started to grow. And then 10 members became 50, became 100, 200, 300. And we just kept spreading throughout the state. I don't know how many we're up to now. I think we're around 800 now. We've got thousands on our nonprofit page. But the beauty in it was we started finding more resources throughout the state and throughout our surrounding states. We had providers that said, hey, I'll come do a training. I'll come host a workshop. So we started hosting these virtual trainings, in-person trainings, and it was so obvious that there was a need for us. So last year, we applied for a nonprofit status, and I left my job. I had been in the auto industry for 17 years, left it to pursue this full time. We were granted our nonprofit status in November. We just completely bloomed from there. At one point, we were the biggest support group in the state, and we have become, in our state, we have a member out of every county.
Amazing.
So we have 55 counties. So we have just spread that love across the state and across the region. And that was the beauty in it, was that we wanted to connect other families so that they would have that support system or someone to talk to. And we've just built programs upon programs from there.
Really interesting and so needed. Everything that you were saying about those feelings of isolation, and nobody gives you a roadmap when your child isn't following the expected path and you have to do so much figuring it out yourself. So I love hearing that. I think we can both relate a lot to what you've said.
Oh yeah, hugely.
Yeah, like you said, no one gives you a roadmap. No one talks about those emotions. No one acknowledges it. And for a lot of our families, they have other families that completely step aside. So the people that they're thinking are going to be on the journey, on the front lines with them, are saying, you guys are living a much different lifestyle than we are now. So they drop off, they fall behind, or they just become unsupportive. And that is what happened to me and my family. We didn't have support around us. We didn't have friends that had children with a disability. We were first generation for both of our families to have a child on the spectrum or be labeled with the disability. It was completely isolating. Nobody really fully understood the severity of the emotions that we were going through, and that grief didn't just stop after diagnosis. Grief pops up 7 years later. I think that is so important for others to really acknowledge that mental health and well-being of the parents and the emotions of these different levels. You have children that are high support needs. That means that the parent has to be there 24/7. They don't get a break. There is no rest in this job. If you have a child on the profoundly autistic end of the spectrum, you don't get breaks. You're not allowed to just say, okay, I got to step aside. No, your kid may eat something they're not supposed to. They may have pica. They may have supports that other people wouldn't be able to relate to. They may have a feeding tube. They may be on different medications, several medications. So I just think the more we're able to talk about the emotions that the parents go through and the support that they need, then the better we're going to be able to regulate our child if we're regulated to.
Yeah, 100%.
Do you have strategies for managing your own mental health and well-being? Are there things that you regularly do to keep yourself sane?
It's different every day. I think the outlook has to change. For me, it took about a year to 2 years to let go of the type A personality. So the I have to be on time had to go away because we're on Connor's time, not my time. The emotions of being worried about what other people thought had to go away. We had to say, this is our life. They're not walking in our shoes. They don't know our struggles. So people that didn't understand why we weren't attending events, why we couldn't bring Connor to certain family members' homes, why certain activities were not going to work for us, why we haven't been to Disney World or the beach, all of those things had to be pushed aside. But for the mental health, therapy. For me, we are strong believers in therapy. And oddly enough, when Connor's therapy center shut down the first time because they did not have a BCBA, we continued taking him to the therapy center because they had counselors there. So we made appointments with the counselors just so we could keep his routine going. So we took him to therapy sessions with us because he recognized the building. He knew the area. He felt comfortable there. So for about 6 months, my husband and I would flip-flop just going to different therapy appointments, just stating that they were for us, but really it was for Connor's routine. But the beauty in it was we were forced to talk to someone. So they knew that they were helping us because they knew our situation. But when you're with someone for an hour to 2 hours, you're not just going to sit there in silence. They're saying, hey, how was your day? How are you guys doing? How's he doing? And they just casually talk to us, not knowing eventually we were going to start to say, oh gosh, we are exhausted. This is awful. We're nervous. We're scared. We don't know what's going on. We're having issues finding resources, finding providers. When we started therapy, we had no idea what to expect. But the beauty in it was just talking and getting that emotion out helped. So now therapy is part of our programming in our nonprofit. We bring in therapists to direct and lead different sessions on the topics of stress and anxiety, PTSD, trauma therapy. And our members are able to speak about their experience, whether it be from their child or their childhood. And we have someone that's given the proper tools and techniques on how to stay calm. When you're put in that hypervigilant state of mind, it's awful. And we lived in it for a long time with Connor because he was going through so many different emotions and not able to self-regulate that we would go into that hypervigilant state, fight or flight. PTSD was a diagnosis of mine that I didn't really speak about for a long time. And we didn't know about different techniques to try to calm ourselves down or get ourselves refocused after he would have an hour long or 2 hour long meltdown. He was harming others. It's just, there's so many different levels of emotions and anxiety that a parent can go through that in this community we don't speak enough about.
100%.
But when we do start to have that conversation, the barriers come down and you have other parents going, oh, we went through that too. So it was important for us to really dive in to a conversation that others weren't having, to at least make it less of a taboo and more of a tool and technique to use.
That's fantastic. What are you hoping to achieve going forwards with your nonprofit?
In our state, we are the last in the nation for funding and resources. So because of how our journey started with the lack of care for Connor, the lack of therapies that were needed, we are hoping to bring and bridge the gap between what families are not able to find versus what is actually out there, even if it's not just in our state. If we can bring in other resources from surrounding areas or nationally known resources that are free for families, that's what we want to do. And then we want to spread more awareness so that we can gain that acceptance overall. Something that we started, one of our programs in our nonprofit, is these classroom kits for schools. So we gift educators these books on inclusion. They involve a little boy that has autism, and it comes with instructions of how you can read it to your class and how you can teach the children to be more inclusive to their peers. So we know it starts in education and for younger children. So we did month of April, the Autism Awareness and Acceptance Month, where we started passing out these kits. We were able to impact over 4,000 students. But the beauty in it was we were also able to keep this program year round. So we want the stigma of just April to go away. We want this to be a year round, hey, it's May, June, July, August. Every month, we hope that they at least have some type of inclusive activity or something that they're able to open up a conversation and say, okay, how can we be nicer? So that is something else that we feel really passionate about, is just speaking out about kindness and inclusion.
I love that.
Who would you say were your key supporters along your journey?
Any of Connor's therapists were huge for us, and they really became our second family more than anything. And building our support group into a community that's now throughout the state was huge. Those families become your supporters, your cheerleaders, the people that you need to have on your worst days. Is nothing feels better than to be able to call another parent and say, oh gosh, you're not going to believe the day that I've had. And then on the other line, going, oh yeah, we did too. And you're talking about situations that you wouldn't be able to say out loud in the general public without having people shake their head or say, oh gosh, these people are crazy. Those have become our absolute backbone of everything that we do. And there's nothing more motivated than meeting these families across the state that are happy that you've connected them, but also happy that they have been able to connect with another member that's around them or just walking this journey together. So you really get a connection for yourself and for your kid.
What advice would you give to parents who are at the start of their autism journey?
Allow yourself time to grieve and allow yourself all of those emotions. It is a journey. It is a long marathon and it is ever changing. So find someone that you can consider your support partner because they are going to be sticking with you long term too. Always have that emotional support because there's too many outside factors that make this journey very difficult, whether it's within your circle, maybe within your family, it could be people at your job not understanding, but having that emotional support is going to be key. That's what I would tell other families. Make sure that you have someone there that can support you throughout the journey.
That's really good advice. Thank you so much for coming on and joining us today, Whitney. Where can listeners go to connect with you?
We are on Facebook, Unpuzzled Parents Connect, and you can also go to our website, unpuzzledparentsconnect.com.
Fantastic. We'll put links to all those in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on the Autism Mums podcast.
We hope you have found a little support, a little solidarity, and a reminder that you are not in this alone.
If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love it if you'd follow the show and share it with another parent or carer who might need to hear it.
And if you've got a story or a moment you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you at www.autismmums.com. theautismmums.com.
Until next time, take care.